godmother gave me stationery. It was jungle themed stationery that had my name. It was like customized. And I would also like publish, write stories and send them to publishers. And I remember one time sending a letter to a publisher that basically writing them being like, here's a chapter of my novel. If you want the rest of the novel, please write back. Also, I want the illustrator of the cover to be the illustrator who does the Babysitter's Club books. And I had like, yes, and I found like it.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Sad Me of the Past, where we invite an established writer to revisit a piece they wrote in their tender years. That piece may fill them with affection, regret, nostalgia, embarrassment, relief, delight, anguish, all of the above, or something else entirely. Every infant must take those early, brave, awkward steps when learning to walk. We writers must make our own early, brave, awkward efforts as we set out to master our craft. So let's travel back to that ancient time when we were bursting with hubris or scared to death, drunk with language or paralyzed by it, determined to become a writer or terrified that we didn't have the stuff. I'll show them, we thought. But what did we show, really, and to whom? Hi, everyone. Welcome to Sad Me of the Past. I'm Stephen Lovely, director of the Iowa Young Writers Studio.
And I'm Lauren Haldeman, the editor for the Writing University.
And I'm Danny Colacci, director of the Magid Center for Writing. We are absolutely thrilled today to be joined by the talented and inspiring and genre-bending writer Carmen Maria Machado. Carmen is the author of the best-selling memoir In the Dream House, the graphic novel The Low, Low Woods, and the award-winning short story collection Her Body and Other Parties. Most recently, she also served as the editor of Critical Hits, Writers Playing Video Games, which is a really tremendous anthology. She has been widely recognized for her work, including being named a finalist for the National Book Award and winner of some of the most prestigious literary awards there are, such as the Bard Fiction Prize, the Lambda Literary Award for Lesbian Fiction, the Lambda Literary Award for LGBTQ Nonfiction, the Brooklyn Public Library Literature Prize, the Shirley Jackson Award, and the National Book Critics Circle John Leonard Prize, to name just a few. Carmen has been hailed as a writer whose books shape, quote, the way we read and write fiction in the 21st century, end quote, and I personally couldn't agree more. As a writer myself and as an educator, I am inspired by Carmen's commitment to breaking down traditional narrative structures, to creating work that is never afraid of risk, of leaning into the possibility of linguistic invention away from literary convention, and speaking toward experiences that help give voice to what has long been silenced in the landscape of contemporary literature. A graduate of the Iowa Writers Workshop, Carmen has received fellowships from the Guggenheim Foundation, Yaddo, and the Pew Center for the Arts. We are so excited to have her on the show with us today. And without further ado, welcome Carmen Maria Machado.
Yay!
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for
so great to have
us.
You. Of so course, great to have you.
Of course.
We'd like to get started, I think, at the beginning. Basically, we've asked you to bring in some of your juvenilia, your old writing. And that's kind of the heart and the core of the podcast, is to sort of explore who we were then and where we are now. And it always makes me feel like I'm going to tear up talking, because like I believe that little version of you still exists. And I believe that like we can connect with it and contact it, and looking at the writing that you were doing at that time is a great way to sort of fuse and sort of approach that tenderness that was there, you know? But I love the idea of like little you. And so I wonder if you could start off with like just maybe a description of who she was and what she was doing, and why she started writing.
So I was one of those super annoying children who was like wanted to be a writer from like the first second I could put a pen to paper. I was really lucky. You know, it's funny because I don't come from a family of artists. My father's a chemical engineer. My mother was a homemaker. But in my household, reading was very central. And my parents were very, very, like really prioritized being us being read to, like all me and my siblings. And so, you know, we were reading, being read to, reading our own books, and then, or, you know, reading books on our own. And then also, like I said, as soon as I could write, I was writing. And so, like, you know, I talk about in a lot of interviews about how my father had this stationery that he got from work that, like, had his name on it and, like, the little logo of the company he worked for. And he'd bring them home for me, and I would make them into little books. So I would, like, and the one that I always talk about is this book that I wrote once called The Biggest Turkey Can't Find the Farm. And the plot of the book is that a turkey is it's like every page he's in a different location. He's in like a zoo or he's at like a hotel, and there's like little wanted signs with his face on it. But he's like, is this the farm? No. And then he's like running away and he's being chased by a maitre d' or like he's being, or, you know, or concierge, or he's being like, a lion roars and he runs away. And then at the very end, he arrives at the farm and he's like, it's here. I'm here. I'm home. And the last page, which you flipped the page, was a roast turkey on a plate.
No.
And it said, I wish I did not come here. And my parents were like,
wow.
The dark.
Wow.
And I'm sure,
the
darkness. I was reading a lot of like Shel Silverstein and Roald Dahl. So I'm sure the instinct to like end on that kind of ending was certainly not my own invention. Like it was clearly something that I had read or thought about in another piece of writing and then had sort of like internalized this and written it down. But like, yeah, so I was always writing poems for my teachers and I was just one of those kids who's been doing that forever. And what's funny is that in searching for the juvenilia that I'm going to read to you guys, I went through a whole bin and it included things like my middle school yearbooks. And I was reading through them and there was like a friend of mine from middle school had written down like, one day I know I'm going to be hearing your name. And then she's like, you're going to find a cure for cancer. Because for a while I wanted to be a doctor, or I said I wanted to be a doctor because I was reading a lot of like medical books. Yeah. Lorene McDaniel, do you guys know her? She wrote a ton of books for young people about kids dying of like cancer or like kidney failure. And like, I read all of them. I was like obsessed. They had like titles like 6 months to live, I want to live, I don't want to die. Like, just these, like, really, and so I was like, I want to be a doctor, which I confused liking books about medical stuff with wanting to be a doctor. So I said I wanted to be a doctor for a long time, so I think people thought I was going to be a doctor, or because I said I was. But I've always, and it's funny because I've like, throughout my whole life have, like, kind of diverted down different paths, or, like, in college I studied photography. Like, I thought I wanted to be a photographer. Like, I've kind of done other things. But I've always, like, reoriented toward writing. Like, it's, like, at some point, it's, like, I almost wake up and I'm, like, wait, what am I talking about?
Right.
What am I doing? Clearly, there's, like, a thing that I'm really good at that is really interesting to me. And so I've always kind of, like, rerouted back toward that space. So, yeah, so I've been doing this, since I was very, very young. So ever since I was really young, I feel like I've been sort of moving in that direction. And then I also saved everything. So I just, like, wrote a lot of stuff, and it's all just, like, in boxes. And I was very active in my high school literary magazine, so I was, like, writing a lot of stuff. And it's funny because I taught at
The Young Writer Studio?
The Young Writer Studio. Is it just the Young Writer Studio?
Summer program, yeah.
Okay. So I've taught, in the mid-2010s for the Young Writer Studio, and those high schoolers, it was so exciting and incredible. And also I was like, man, these guys are so far ahead of where I was in high school. Because I feel like when I was reading some of their work, I was like, I would read this in a literary magazine, like, right now.
Yeah.
And, like, I was not writing that kind of stuff in high school. It was all very, it was like fairies putting dew on the flowers. And I famously wrote a story. I tried to find a copy of it. I couldn't. But I famously wrote a story that I submitted to the literary magazine anonymously. So we talked about it, but no one knew it was mine. And the story involved a girl who, like, takes drugs at a party and dies, and they discover that she's dead at the end of the story. So sort of like a Sixth Sense type ending.
That's like another medical story.
Yeah, I mean, my obsessions have never changed. Like, reading my old stuff, I'm like, oh, I'm interested in, like, it's like I'm horny. I'm writing about, it's like medical body stuff. It's like, nature, like, there's, like, themes and images and ideas and tendencies that just reappear, and I'm like, oh, I've always been the same writer. I've been getting better, but I've been, the instincts that I've had are the same. And, like, rereading it, it's like, okay, like, a lot of these are very silly with, like, one insight in it, or, like, one really good image that, like, honestly, I would put in something right now that I could, honestly, I could just, like, harvest it out. And then I guess as you keep working, the silliness, the proportions just change, right? Where it's like you begin to figure out, like, what's actually working, like, what, and you chip away and push away at the other stuff, and eventually, like, this thing that's, like, kind of essential and true, like, remains.
This is a random question, but did you ever read Reader's Digest?
Oh, I loved Reader's Digest. Like, I did. I really did. Yeah.
Drama in real life. And,
totally.
Like, all of the, there were so many terrifying medical stories in there.
I also read all of the, like, the chicken soup books.
Oh, yeah.
And what's really funny is my ex-wife actually worked for the chicken soup for the Soul company in her, like, early 20s. And I remember her telling me once about how about how most of the stories are totally invented or like written or like not. I was honestly shocked. I was like, wait, are you telling me that the stories of Chicken Soup for the Soul and all of its variations are not true stories? And she was like, oh no, most of them are.
How could I have been led astray?
And I was like, wow, you've really just like shattered my world.
My whole childhood was a lie.
I know, right? I also really liked all those books. I read all those books that like also were like all hoaxes when I got older, like Go Ask Alice, yeah. A Boy Named Dave, like all these books that were like nonfiction or like the Amityville Horror, like books that like had this like sort of sheen of nonfiction that then I got older and I was like, oh wait, this is actually like nonsensical. Like Go Ask Alice, which like I recently did Sarah Marshall's podcast. Oh my God.
I have to think of it. I was so terrified of the Amityville Horror.
The Amityville Horror is like, is really scary. And it's funny because when you're reading it as an adult, I'm like, oh, this is just about getting in over your head financially with real estate and domestic violence. That's all. Like the themes of the Amityville Horror are like not what you would think. It's like, yeah, it's about domestic violence and like being like struggling because you've like bought a house that you really can't afford and you're like struggling to.
Oh, you're wrong about.
Oh, you're wrong about. Oh my God, thank you. I did, and so I also did like an episode of You're Wrong About Go Ask Alice, which I hadn't read since I was a child. And then reading it being like, no person who has done drugs wrote this story. Like there's nothing in here that's real. Like it's so bizarre how, but like when I was young, I took it as like gospel. I was like, oh, this is really serious. So I feel, sorry, I'm like all off. I'm like all over the place. But yeah, I feel like I was just really, I've always been obsessed with the same things, returning to them. But I was telling you the story about this like literary magazine that meeting that I was in where I'd written this story. This girl had died at a party. But then famously in the story, I wrote that the party had barrels of ecstasy.
Yeah. Oh.
And I remember like the meeting and like the senior, because I was probably like a freshman, and the senior, like I remember there's like a pause and she was like, does ecstasy come in barrels? And I, yeah, and I was, like, very, you know, internally was very embarrassed. Cause I was like, oh, but I didn't know that because I was, like, a total goody-two-shoes, very religious teenager, had never done drugs, never broke rules, never. Like, I was a very, very, like, kind of uptight. I don't know if uptight's the, well, no, uptight. I was uptight. But, like, a rule follower and very kind of, like, you know, worried about what adults thought of me and, like, you know, I was just like, this very rigid kind of young person, and so I certainly was interested in, like, the drama, the idea of drugs, but I would never, ever do that. So it was just this, like, very weird energy.
I mean, who knows the measurements? Like, it could be a barrel.
I mean, if you're listening to this and you're like, XC does come in barrels, like, please write to me and
I think it's, like, a much smaller unit, but there's no way.
I suppose if you wanted a lot of
it could come in barrels, right? It could come in any unit you wanted it to.
All drugs could come in a barrel.
That's true. Literally all or any. But, yeah, so I feel like revisiting this material and revisiting just, like, this young version of myself. And then, it's mostly so silly. And then there were these brief flashes of insight where I was like, oh, I was getting at something. Like, I understood something fundamental about what I was obsessed with and interested in and what I wanted to talk about and how I wanted to write about it. And then also was, like, reading all over the place, and like you could see me like following my influences like in different directions. Where it's like, you know, like I'm not gonna read from it, but I brought in my NaNoWriMo manuscript. Do you guys know NaNoWriMo?
Yeah, of course.
No way. I did NaNoWriMo the second year it existed, so it would have been like 2000.
Is this it?
Two maybe. This is
wow.
The title of this book, and I use the book, the title so loosely, is She Thought She Was a Dust Storm, She Thought She Was a Drop of Rain.
Nice.
And what is this book about? I could not tell you. I was rereading it and I was like,
it is substantial, though.
Says, literally what is
we're
happening.
It says working title.
Where it is held together by a large black binder.
It is, and it's single space.
Yes. I'll get a picture for the website.
And it's written in that, like, type, what is it, like, courier font, so it looks like a typewriter.
Yeah, we'll get a photo for the website.
But it's, like, a lot of it, but this, I remember this because I was, like, reading this being, this is gibberish, and then I was like, oh, right, I read Finnegan's Wake. A friend of mine and I read Finnegan's Wake together, and I was like, oh, and then I was, like, thinking about stream of consciousness. And so, like, you could see that just, like, in this, where I'm like, oh, I'm just kind of... And then brief flashes of interesting stuff in a lot of weirdness, you know? So I feel like it was just so fascinating to sort of see, to follow my own path, and to sort of see, like, how that's getting shaped, which, like, I haven't really thought about love's material in a really long time.
It sounds like you have a lot of material to think about.
Oh my God. So much. I mean, really, it was actually quite hard to pick stuff, anything, because yeah. I was just like, I really feel like I could discuss like any right. number of these things and could really think about like a whole pieces of my current like career and practice and like right. the way that that has sort right. of manifested now. So it's a really, I don't know, it's really interesting.
Okay. Well, we can definitely, I mean, if you can read one thing, you can read a few different things, but maybe you could tell us a little bit about like what you'd like to read today, what you're going to read, and then maybe set the scene for us a little bit.
Sure.
Like where did you like to do your writing in the house? Where are we in the country? What, you know, are you, did you like to write it? Did you write at school? Did you write in your bedroom? Did you have like a mood lamp? Like what, you know, what was, did you have any rituals?
I'm kind of
obsessed with this stuff. So,
yeah,
maybe you can kind of just set the stage for us. Like where were you growing up, Carmen? I guess I don't know that.
So I grew up in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
In like the suburbs. So a very, you know, when I was really young, the house that we lived in was kind of at the edge of like a rural area. Like it was kind of like cornfields in one direction. And then it's funny because my parents don't live in this house anymore. But the last time I saw the house, which was maybe like 10 years ago, it's just development yeah. in every direction. Like you can't even see any kind of. So it's a really kind of a fast moving kind of area and has really changed. But yeah, so it's just like this sort of suburban Pennsylvania, eastern Pennsylvania neighborhood. And where did I mean, I, you know, I had a desk that I wrote at. My father bought me a laptop. This is like really dating me. My dad bought me like a used laptop at some kind of like tech convention. I don't actually fully understand what it was. Because I like, was begging my parents for a computer.
Yeah.
And he finally got me this like used computer for probably like a couple $100. This big, heavy laptop yeah. that I loved and was obsessed with and went all over the place with. But I mean, metaphorically speaking, I was always at my desk when I was writing or, like, on my bed. But, yeah, usually at my desk. Yeah, I had lots of I loved, like, collaging, and I love making a space my own. And I still – this is still a thing that's true about me. Like, I just love, like, lots of stuff on walls. So, like, I had my mother was, like, very picky about what I put on my wall, so I would have to, like, I'd have to, like, work around. It was, like, this kind of weird power struggle between us where I wanted to just, like, collage stuff on the walls. And I feel like also my room was very much, like, in retrospect, it was, like, I don't know how I didn't realize I was gay, but, like, it was the posters were, like, Orlando Bloom, who I thought was just, like, the hottest man who'd ever lived because he looks like a woman. And also, like, I guess even before that was, like, JTT. It was, like, you know, like Jonathan Taylor Thomas, like, from Tiger Beat or whatever. Also, this looks like a tiny dyke. And then, like, Mia Hamm because I got, like, Sports Illustrated for Women, which I think and I've never been into sports at all. Why was I getting this magazine? I think because I wanted a poster of Mia Hamm.
Yeah.
Like, this poster of Mia Hamm. That, yeah, so it was just, like, this very, like, very me. Like, I was very, I'm always about making my space my own. It's, like, very important to me. So I feel like that was kind of the space around me. And I did have a lava lamp that I got for, like, Christmas one year that I really loved. And actually, what I'm going to be reading is from, like, kind of it's, like, end of high school, beginning of college. So, and, like, college was, like, basically the same, except that I went to American University in D.C. because I thought I wanted to be a journalist. Well, my dad was like, if you want to write and have health insurance, you should be a journalist, because this was like 2004. Mm. And so
dads are so into health insurance.
They're so, I mean, yeah. rightfully,
I mean,
so.
Rightfully, you know, so.
Exactly what my dad's
But what's
like,
funny, yeah. what's funny is just that like what I didn't realize was that journalism as a career was going to become incredibly
right.
unstable.
Yeah,
you know,
right. Journalism used to be the solid bet.
Totally, like, yeah. You know. And I, you know, my yeah. dad had worked at the same company for like my whole life, so like I think he just like had no idea. So I like went to college, took like one semester of journalism classes, and was like, I fucking hate this. I don't want to interview people. I don't want to go to like, you know, monthly like town hall meetings and like record the minutes. I was just like, this is just so tedious and annoying. And I remember actually a journalism teacher of mine, I actually, another piece of writing that I found in this box was like a little essay I wrote for her. Basically, I was like, I hate it when you cut my adjectives, because she would always be cutting my, and she literally wrote this like sweet note on the top. She was just like, you'll find your way. Like, you're a good writer. Like, you'll figure
yeah.
it out. You know, because I think she knew that like I was good at writing, but I wasn't, this was not like the exact kind of place I needed to be. But yeah, and so in college it was kind of the same, where it was funny because my roommate, she did not believe in decoration, so like our room was like half just like totally collage with pictures,
yeah.
and then half just like white cinder block. And then at some point, I think she noticed how weird it looked, and she bought a single poster of like a Bermuda beach and just yeah. like stuck it on the wall. So like it was her weird side of the, her side of the room, which was like very naked, and then my like incredibly collaged. And I was just we're currently hanging up art in our new house, and it's like, and as we're hanging it up, I'm like, God, so much of this art is just like naked women mm-hmm. in various ways. And I had this really clear memory of my mother coming into my dorm room visiting once and standing in the doorway, kind of looking around and saying, there's a lot of naked women in this room, because I had like at that point done like art classes where I'd done like figure drawing.
Right.
And I was like, yes. And I think that was the moment that she was kind of like, huh, okay. Like, I think there's something going on here.
You kind of evolved from Mia Hamm and Orlando Bloom.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I might, whatever. My sexuality is like its own kind of like journey and funny. But yeah, I think at that point, I mean, but it was funny because like I was in high school and I feel like I sort of got that I was queer but didn't fully understand it and was a little bit in denial, but not even for like religious reasons. I think I just didn't understand what it meant. Like, I think I didn't. Like, I thought that everyone wanted to, like, kiss their friend's freckles. that was, like, a normal girl's thing. And also, like, I also am into men. So, like, I was, like, just confused about, like, what was happening. And then I got to college and I met other gay people and I was like, oh, wait, no, that's what I am. And then, like, suddenly it was extremely clear. So I feel like there's just something. Yeah, like, that was just this moment of, like, massive revelations for me in these couple of years. I was writing a ton. I was figuring out, like, what I wanted to do with my life, like, what I wanted to do with my career, like, what I wanted my practice to look like, how I wanted to make money. Like, there were just all these things kind of being shaped in that moment. And so in that turmoil, this work was born.
Wow.
And I think, and also something that's kind of interesting, sorry, a little more context, which is that, like, I wrote a ton of poetry. I wrote a lot of prose, but I wrote a ton of poetry. And when I came to grad school, I feel like I, like, came to the Writers' Workshop for fiction. I feel like that part of my brain, because I was like, I don't know anything about poetry. And there are poets here who are, like, real poets, and I'm not a real poet. I write fiction, and, like, I write prose. And there were a couple of poems that I kind of, like, liked that I took, and I kind of, like, stitched them into, like, little microfictions, and then, like, would try to publish them or whatever. But I feel like this part of my brain was like, I'm not a poet. Like, I'm a fiction writer. And what's funny is in the last, like, year and a half, I've been writing poetry because I've been really struggling with a fiction project. And so I've been like, I needed to do something that I could like do in an afternoon. So I began to try to like write little things. And I've actually started publishing poetry, which is like wild. And it's funny because then like going back, I'm like, oh, I used to write poetry all the time. Like it was actually like one of the primary ways that I wrote. And it's funny to like go back and realize like, oh, this is kind of a root of mine. And it's weird how I just kind of let that piece of me like be somewhere else for a while. I think because I genuinely just like, well, it's not, you know, like I'm good at fiction. I think I just kind of let it go to the side and it's
dormant,
really,
but not dead.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's like funny because I don't even feel comfortable saying that I'm a poet now, just that I write poetry sometimes, but
no one's comfortable saying they're a poet.
Poets can be intimidating.
I mean, yeah. I think that's what it was. I think I actually did find the poets here really intimidating.
Yeah, they know a lot of stuff.
They really do.
It's all a front.
And I have just, like, very, like, funny, clear memories of, like, early interactions here where I was just like, poets, man. Okay.
But it's really fascinating, too, because it's also tied up to this identity, right? It's this idea that we, many of us, come into ourselves and we are told by society there's one thing we can be. Or mm-hmm. we grow up in a family whose parents had one job or one career, and that's the model that's sort of put forward to many of us. And so when you step into a place like graduate school, you sort of think, all right, this is the lane that I've been given. And I felt like I had a similar experience in grad school where I thought, oh, I'm going to come and maybe I'll be inspired to try different genres. And then I realized very quickly, no, they want you in one space, or that's the way I was made to feel. And so I'm always inspired when I meet writers who move across genres and do it so naturally. It's very, very inspiring.
Well, I think that also there was this realization I had at some point where I was like, I do write in a lot. Because, like, obviously, you know, fiction was where I started, but then I remember, like, at some point I moved into memoir, and, you know, I started writing into, like, essays and criticism, and I did a comic, like, a graphic novel where, like, and that was literally because a DC Comics wrote to me, and we're like, we're huge fans, can you just write a book for us, and we'll hire an artist? And I was like, yes, but I don't know anything about that. And they were like, that's fine, we'll walk you through the process. And I was like, yeah, I actually do, like, trying new things, and I like stretching my muscles, and like now I'm working on like screenplays, and like I'm working on scripts, and that's like also a totally different like muscle that you exercise. That's like just like a totally different animal. So it's really interesting to then realize like why was I resisting going back to poetry for so long? And then it was really just took me being like, I'm so exhausted, and like it's been a tough, you know, COVID really. It's been like a tough couple of years for me, like sort of mental health wise, and I've just been kind of struggling with a lot of stuff. And poetry actually felt like this space where I could like create in miniature, in this way that felt really satisfying, and like did the thing that writing a short story felt like it did, but like it was more. I could like hold it in my hands, and it felt very like containable in this way that was like helpful mentally for me. So anyway, so yeah, it's funny. Just like, of all the things that I pulled out, I was just like, man, I. It's like so much poetry.
That's amazing.
Anyway, yeah. So.
All right, let's hear.
Okay, so, sorry, that was like a lot.
No, that's exactly what we wanted.
Okay. I'm just like, yeah, now I'm so excited.
I can't believe you had a lava lamp. I just pulled that out of nowhere.
Oh, I love that. I wish I still had it, honestly, but yeah, I don't know.
Can you even get one these days?
Yeah, you can get one. Well,
I don't know, can you? What's in them? What is a lava lamp?
I feel like wasn't something illegal in them.
Probably.
I think they can catch on fire if you leave them plugged in for too long.
But I remember it because I remember like also taking it. I had it like for a long time. It just got lost in some move, but or maybe I just got rid of it, but
I didn't mean to get off topic.
No, it's okay.
You talk about lava lamps.
Lava lamps were made out of barrels of ecstasy.
Okay, so I'm going to read like maybe like two or three poems.
Yeah, yes. Go for it.
Okay, great.
And we're not going to workshop them or anything.
Thank God. Okay. Okay, great. Perfect. Okay, so this one is called "When the Husband of My First Cousin Gave Me Half a Pomegranate." In the yawn of the kitchen, the husband of my first cousin, whose name I can't remember, who was old enough to be my father, told me how his father told him to never cut a pomegranate with a knife. That, he said, would kill the tree it came from. And with that, he took a knife, a flash of stainless steel, sliced the pomegranate in half, slipping through the pinkish skin, the rind tinged with orange and green. One half stayed in his hand, the other wobbled on the formica like a cradle, absently tipped. Then the husband of my first cousin handed me the half he'd had in his hand. I took it, too small for my palm. The seeds glistened, red, fat, translucent kernels. I rolled one loose and crushed it between my teeth. It was tart and stung the cut on the inside of my mouth. In a mess of relatives who only remember me in Bobby socks, I gave no thought to Persephone, there with my hand-stained ruby. And the husband of my first cousin told me that when I was 8, I'd offered to marry his son.
Wow. Was that how it ends?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Carmen, again, just clarify, how old were you when you wrote that? And that was late high school, early college?
This is probably like early college, yeah. I would say.
I mean, it's fairly advanced work. I mean, we can all agree.
Oh, that's very good.
Oh, thank you. Oh, okay, wait, I actually don't. Okay, I like literally was like, I can't read. I don't want to, because I feel like it is, like now that I'm looking at it, I'm like, but it's like, okay, Persephone. It's like, okay.
Persephone
like,
made it in.
Yeah, of course she did, right? Like, I feel like I can see where like my, I can almost like tell. Sorry, I think also something that's interesting about reading a lot of this work is also recognizing the role that, like, my life has even in, like, fictionalized spaces, which is a thing that I'm really interested in because I like, obviously, like, I've written, like, memoir and nonfiction, but I also write a lot of fiction that involves a lot of, like, stuff from my real life, which, like, all writers do, all fiction writers do, right? It's very common. But I'm really, but I feel like people, even now, like, people have, like, a lot of, like, non-writers especially get confused about, like, the role that reality or one's life or one's experiences or just the, plays in works of fiction. Mm-hmm. And I realize that I'm talking about poetry, which I also, like, if you ask me to, like, what is the relationship between fiction and poetry, I'd be like, I don't even fucking, don't even ask me, I don't know. But, like, this, like, the, and so, like, I'm pretty sure something like this happened and I can sort of understand like where my brain like how my brain was like trying to organize this scene or this moment or this information, and then where my brain's like, oh, I got to Persephone, like, you know, like, and so I can sort of, it's like I can just understand my instincts.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that you, when you were writing that, I don't know if there's a, I don't know exactly what I'm asking, is there a difference between writing a poem and you're performing to being a poet, or just writing a poem as a poet? Because I know, like, early work that I did, I was pretending to be a poet. You know
okay,
what I mean?
Sure. Oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think that, like, okay, so, like, maybe this is what you're asking. Maybe it's not. I'm not sure. But, like, a thing I also noticed, because I'm now, so, like, the poetry I'm writing right now, I have a good friend who's a poet, a really wonderful poet, Seamus Fay, who has a book coming out in May. And they, I remember, like, when we first started working, like, we first just, like, became friends, and then, like, I was like, oh, I'm working on these poems. We started, like, kind of exchanging work and talking about it. And they were talking to me about this, like, thing that I was doing where they're like, you shouldn't, like, drop a dramatic final word to the bottom. Mm. Like, it doesn't, they're like, just don't do that. Just try, like, stitching it back, and it actually, like, lands better. So, like, I can see, like, that. So, like, huh. You know, where I'm, like, ending on a dramatic word, and it's, like, dropped down to the very bottom. And it's, like, now that I'm reading that, I'm like, oh, right, I understand. But I think in my mind when I was, like, you know, 19, 20, I was like, right, but this is how you end. This is how you do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Flourish. It's, like, that's what a poet does or what a poem does. And then now, like, having, like, realized that, I'm like, oh, right, but you can just, it actually, like, lands better if you pull it back up. And so I think I can see, even in, like, line breaks, and, like, sorry, I'm, like, all over the place. I have this really funny memory of, because when I was a student here, I had to teach, like, a intro to creative writing class, and I had to teach poetry and nonfiction and fiction. And I was like, I don't know anything about poetry. I got a whole complex about it. And I was like, what do I do? And someone was like, just find poems you like and just talk about, like, what, it, you know, whatever. It's, like, 101. And then I remember in class a student saying, like, raising their hand and being like, excuse me, how do you know when to break a line? And I was like, I'll get back to you on that. And then I was like, literally, I think I really came into Die House. I was like, I need a poet. Is there a poet somewhere? Yeah, find me a poet. Help. Find me a poet. And I found a poet. And I was like, how do you know when to break a line? And they were like, oh, well. And then they kind of explained to me, like, ways that you might decide, like, how a line might be broken. And again, that's just like, but I think a lot of that is also, like, articulating things that you have sort of internalized. So cause there's a difference between, like, just, like, kind of reading poetry and then, like, thinking about it and writing it. And that's someone being like, oh, have you thought about the line break might misdirect the reader in an interesting way, where then, like, the next line will, like, kind of do something. Like, there's a surprise that the line break creates. And it's like, oh, I've never thought about it quite so explicitly. But now that you've said it out loud, I'm like, that makes sense to me. And I can think about that now when I'm moving forward. So also a lot of this has to do with just, like, someone saying out loud these, like, craft ways of thinking about craft that, like, if you're not in that exact discipline, so if you're not on that track in school, you're getting almost like a quick little education on, like, just like, yeah, well, it's a quick and dirty way to think about, like, how to break a line, how to title a poem, where it starts, where it ends, whatever, like, just basic stuff, which I could also talk about, like, the equivalent things in fiction, like how you might make certain choices about where to start, where to end, how things, you know, whatever.
But you're saying you might have known these things intuitively prior to that.
Yes, and then also known the wrong things intuitively.
Okay.
So both, right? So it's like some of it might have been just like, yeah, I sort of knew it, or it might have been like, it made sense to me, you know, that poetry ends on, like, a dramatic final word that you drop down to the very bottom. And, like, I had to have someone explain to me, no, it's actually better if you don't do that. And then I did, and then I tried it without it, and I was like, oh, yes. Actually, now that I'm looking at it, that totally makes sense. But I had to have someone, like, say it to me explicitly. Anyway, yeah.
Do you think that falls under the category of, like, I mean, usually when you read a lot of work by young people or even by yourself, you know, you're more sort of, I don't know what the right word is, you're more sort of romantic or something, you're more innocent, you're just more prone to doing those kinds of things. Like, you're more dramatic, maybe.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, like,
you don't really like it. Yeah.
Yeah, you're more like melodramatic. Like, you're more like naked. You're like a naked little nerve. Like you're like a nerve with no sheath. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just, you're just so exposed and so, and like, everything you want and you feel is so, like, vivid and so intense and so, I mean, God, and, like, you're so horny, you're so mad, you're so upset, you're so excited, everything is fucking new to you. Like, there's just, it's just such a state, an incredible state of being, which is why, I mean, I think this question of, like, how does one feel toward the, like, tender little self that wrote something like this, it's like, you have to almost admire it, because you're like, she felt in a way that I have probably never felt since, which is, like, crazy thing to say, but it's like, yeah, like, I'll never get back that exact energy of, like, 15, 17, 19-year-old Carmen. Like, that is a rarefied space that, like, I can never re-enter. I can, like, admire her and see her and think about her and try, but, like, it's like, right, that's like, innocence is not even the right word, but there's just like, there's like a nakedness to it that, like, is hard to recapture, I think.
I remember at that age, I've figured it out recently, what the difference was, is that especially with big feelings of, like, lust and love, is there was a point in my life where I loved in a in a way without knowing what the hurt felt like. Mm-hmm. And then when you get the hurt, there's no way to go back to that way of loving. You know what I mean? And I feel like that's happening right around this time.
Totally. And I think I completely agree. And I think that that's just true of like, right. It's like there are almost like there's like places of no return that happen in your life where there's like relationships you're in, people you meet, things that happen to you, happen to your body, like whatever, like where you just, there's no way to like, you'll never know. And I feel like there have been like moments in my life where I've been like changed, like where it's like, I'm not the same person I was at this moment before and after. And like, I think when I was younger, because like, you know, when I didn't bring it in because it was like too intense, but like I also took like a nonfiction class in college and wrote a lot about like a sexual violence that I'd experienced as a young person. And it was really hard to read because a lot of it, what I was talking about, and I remember having these thoughts, was like thinking about, I used to be someone else, mm-hmm. and then this thing happened, and I'm someone different. And I also used to internalize it as very, because I was very religious for a while, like it was like, if God meant to me to be a certain way, and then this thing happened that changed it, did God always mean for me to be the person that after this thing, or have I strayed from this like vision, which is like a really impossible awful
no,
question.
We'll never figure it
we'll
out.
We'll never know, right? And it's like, and this is like questions people have asked themselves for like all of human history, right? And like these questions about like destiny and omniscience and omnipotence and like trauma and like, you know, but I feel like there is too something about this version of myself where I'm seeing this like moment where like some hurts had already happened and some hurts had not come yet. And yeah, and there is just this like kind of weird, I don't know. It is, and it's like, how could you not feel tenderly toward that self who like just didn't know what was coming, you know? And like, how could you not be like, and I think with a lot, it's funny because I recently, my sister gave me a huge stack of DVDs I did not know existed. And they were like, they had been digitized from VHSs and they were home videos.
Yes.
Wow.
That I have no memory of my father filming anything, and he filmed a ton. And wow. I actually don't know how to reconcile this because I'm like, I had no idea my father was filming, and there are videos of so many things that I just have, I remember the things happening, but I don't remember my father filming them, and they're all on tape. And my girlfriend was sitting with me and watching me and watching these videos and really loved them and was like, I just feel so tenderly toward this little weird version of you. Like there was this one video that opened up with, and it's like a close up of my face. And my eyes are crossed and she's like, literally, what is happening? And then back out and you realize that we're at my brother's like a Boy Scout event. And I'm reading. I'm like not paying attention. I'm like reading, but I'm like reading so intensely that I'm like, like staring at this book, and I'm just like sitting there, kind of like dreamily, kind of, you know. And then reading this book, and which is like a thing that I was often doing, which is like ignoring what was going on around me and reading. And she was just like, "Look at you! Like look at this little tiny Carmen! Like she's so..." Like, she just has no idea, but also she's both. And it's, like, funny because she's, like, you're quieter than I would have thought you would be. She's, like, it's weird because I feel like I can see parts of you, but also you seem different. Like, this does not seem like the child version of you. This is a quiet, obedient child. Like, this is a very, and she was, like, it's weird how I feel so tenderly toward her. And also I'm, like, amazed because I'm, like, how did she become this, like, loud, opinionated, like, you know, bratty? Like, how did that, like, where did that, and I'm, like, yeah, I guess that's just, like, because I think when we're young, we are both who we are going to be in this essential way. And also, like, we have no idea who we're going to be.
Yeah.
And it's, like, this weird, like, contradiction of time, you know?
And Carmen, but even the poem you read first, I know we're going to get to probably another one here in a second, but even on that page, and you talked about this before, the body shows up in that, a reframed, refractured narrative in which the sort of main point of the story is given at the end, and at the beginning, every time we think we might understand the relationship between the husband and the cousin and the speaker, we're just repeating those phrases. And so the music is what's taking you away.
Yeah.
And so in some ways, it sort of feels like our younger literary selves are clearly embedded in all this work, and we're sort of growing up through that. And that's a really fascinating thing to be reminded of as a writer, that we can always, it's not that the work we started with isn't meaningful, it's that we have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And going from there is, I think, the step that we all got to remind ourselves to keep taking.
Well, I think also it's like really useful to frame questions of like drafting and like how you get, like people are like, how do you get started? How does one become a writer? Like, you know, these questions. And I'm like, well, you just are obsessed with things. There's stuff that you can't shake and you are into. And like, for me, it was like, again, like horniness and weird medical stuff and like nature and myths and legends and fairy tales. Yeah. And like, you know, and like, right. And if you read all the old stuff, even the oldest stuff, you can see those themes popping up. And it's like, right, because like all you're really doing is just like tracking an obsession like a bloodhound and theoretically getting better at what you do and like eventually being able to like almost like articulate it better. But like you're just tracking this across time. And like, this is why I think, you know, my favorite writing, I love reading like multiple books by the same writer or like multiple where I can like track their obsessions and their recurring images and like the things that you can clear, like, or like they're working on the same problem over and over and you can see them kind of like chewing on it and meditating on it and reframing it. And like, I think if you look at my work, like I think even now, like the work that I've published, like I'm like, yeah, I'm like really like asking the same like set of five questions kind of over and over again. But I think that's actually really normal. I think, yeah. I mean, the writers write for different reasons. And like, I mean, that's not why one writes, that's fine. But like for me, it's just like, you're just like following that across time.
What are the questions? Can you identify them on the spot or?
I mean, or maybe like questions or like modes of thinking. So like for me, it's like, being so horny you want to die. What does it mean?
Yeah.
Why does it matter? I think the body and the ways the body is fragile and the body breaks down and both like serves you and confounds you.
Yeah.
And I guess we'll do so until you die. I think like I don't know how to frame it, but like thinking about like modes of thinking or like reframing. So like a thing that happens a lot. It appeared in, like, I want to say it was, I wrote about it in The Resident, which is a story in my first book. But that's also a book that, like, or that story has a lot of stuff from my childhood. In like, it's funny because it's, like, probably the least autobiographical of all my work. But it's also, that's the one where she goes through, like, a writer's residency and, like, has kind of a mental breakdown. But it's funny because everyone's like, oh, did you go? And I'm like, actually, most of this is made up. But, like, at some point she talks about a Girl Scout. Mm-hmm. And then Girl Scouts that happened to me where it's just, like, a girl in my troop. Well, it happens to the protagonist in the story, but it happened to a girl in my Girl Scout troop where she sleptwalked while we were camping. So she, like, woke up in the middle of the night. She was, like, in the woods in the darkness and started screaming. And, like, the girl – and we all woke up because she was screaming and they had to – so, like, but there's this part in it where she talks about, like, lying down on the floor. And like everything, imagining that like the floor of the kitchen is like a vista. Like I think there's a way about like thinking and reframing like imagery and miniatures and like things that are bigger or smaller than they should be, or like little dioramas or like spaces that are kind of contained.
I remember that place because I remember it was really striking. Like I remember reading it and thinking, you know, what an interesting thing for a writer to be sort of concerned with. It had something to do with, arranging and reconfiguring and
like
framing.
Dehumanization is the way that I talk about it.
Yeah, and it was, amazing. Yeah.
And I think that, like, and so again, I feel like what's funny is, again, like rereading a lot of this, I'm like, God, I really, like, truly, I have never changed. Like, I am obsessed with the same stuff in this work, and, like, you can see me meditating. And honestly, there are, like, images that have, like, followed me throughout.
Yeah.
Where, like, they probably appeared in published work of mine, and they've appeared in variations that have appeared in, like,
well, I love how if you cut the pomegranate with a knife, the tree that it came from, and I just thought that just feels sort of that magical, spiritual, sort of hidden connections between things. Like that feels like something that maybe has also traveled forward. I'm not sure.
You know what's so funny is, again, like I don't remember. I think probably some variation of that poem happened. Like I'm pretty sure someone told me that. And I think what's so interesting about like that poem and, like, that piece of it, even though I don't actually remember the events that would have led to the poem, but I do remember, I feel like a thing I've always also known, and this is true, like, with my life, I kept a live journal for, like, a decade, and I feel like with a lot, that is, like, honestly incredible archival material. It's incredible. It's, like, I was really, but, like, I think that would happen a lot is I would just be, like, because that was my first experience of, like, writing for an audience, because I actually did at some point have, like, a ton of people reading me who weren't friends, like they were just like strangers who like found it. And I remember just like things would happen where I would be like, that's gonna make a good, I can imagine the scene that will be, or I can imagine. So I would write like these like little almost mini like essays where I would just say like, here's what happened at work today, or here's whatever. But it would, they would have this, because I feel like I got this instinct for like someone would say a thing to me or do something and I would be like, oh, like I'm yoinking that. I want that. Like that's there's something about that, like that phrase or that idea or that thing that just happened or that image that like I just put it in my little in my pocket and I'm gonna go home and I'm gonna put it in something because I feel like that's just how kind of writer I am. Is I'm kind of this like gremlin-y like I'm just like
you're a collector.
I'm a collector. I was a collector as a child. I had like a seashell collection. I had a rock collection. I had a coin collection. I had all these collections and I feel like I also love a list.
Oh,
and
I love
lists
a list.
Appear in a lot of my work, both as a young person and also then what I like now in my work. And I'm actually really obsessed with like how lists function in stories and you know, and I think they're really fascinating. So I just so I think you can just again, you can track all that.
Well, and it's interesting also to think about collage.
Oh yeah.
Now, you're talking about all the collages and how that's collection, but also it's reframing.
Mm-hmm.
You're taking a picture, an idea, a word or phrase from one thing. And you're just shoving it up against something else to see what newness it makes.
Yeah.
It's just really, man, I love these interviews.
I know. I feel like I get so inspired. Yeah. One thing I wanted to just return to and is, you know, when we've interviewed other writers, and I think when I think about like myself as a young writer, you know, nowhere near as accomplished as this, it is sort of... You look back and you feel a certain tenderness or pity and you think to yourself, oh, poor young thing. But like the admiration is something that's really interesting to me. Like, can you talk a little bit more about like, you know, this person that you look back and see, you know, what is it that you really admire about them or what strikes you? I mean, you already said it a little bit, so I'm...
Well, no. I mean, I think part of it is this thing about this that you're saying about, like, the nakedness and openness and sort of the raw vulnerability and the melodrama. And, it's funny because I've always, like, felt deeply... I mean, I guess this is true, whatever. Like, when you're a young person, you do. And I think this is actually why, like... And it's so sad because I feel like I meet even people in their, like, early 20s who have had that tenderness and that feeling kind of, like, knocked out of them in various ways, which is also why, like, when I am especially interacting and teaching with, like, undergrads, I'm talking a lot about, like, how to access play and how to access, like, ways of, like, finding that creative. Because, like, all kids are creative. It's, like, you were born, you making stories, and kids make things talk to other things, and that's just, like, how we all are inherently. And then I think a lot of people don't see value in it, or they're told there's no value in it, and they let that go, and then they kind of go and, you know. But I think that there is that piece of you that is very real and is always there. And, you know, when I was young, I feel like that was a huge piece of my life. And I think that a way that this, like, you know, I also just, like, felt really deeply. And a thing that would happen a lot when I was young was I would just be, like, feeling deeply and, like, weeping. And my family would be like, you're being a drama queen. Like, cut it out.
Ugh. Yeah.
And it's funny because I didn't really think, I hadn't think too much about it until, like, I was writing my memoir, which is about domestic violence. And I was thinking a lot about the idea that, like, you're feeling more than you should, or that, like, how you're responding to something awful is, like, inappropriate somehow. When in fact, like, feeling deeply is, like, the most human, true thing we can possibly do. And it's like, how else can we possibly, like, respond?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also the idea that your feeling is debilitating someone else, or as in an adult too. I mean, we all
exactly.
Like you're a child, and you have an adult telling you, "Oh, you're being dramatic," and it's like, one, you're a grown adult.
Yeah.
You should be able to manage your own responses to, you know, but then also like, so it's a burden.
Yeah, this is so funny because I also like. You know, my theory is that, like, you maybe have good perspective on... It takes about 10 years to get perspective on yourself. So, for me, it's, like, in my 20s, I feel like I had a good perspective on, like, my teenage self. And now that I'm in the 30s, I'm having a good perspective on, like, my 20s self. And I suspect this is... At least for me, this is the kind of gap. And I realized... Maybe in the last like decade, I sort of learned about the idea that the parentified child and like the... And this was like a huge part of my life, which is like that I feel like because I was so adult, quote unquote, in so many ways, because I was like very mature, you know, I was a good student. I was like very, but I think that like adults in my life took advantage of that in various ways. And one of them was that I think there was this idea that like my feelings were sort of like inappropriate. And this is being told to me by like a parent who was like the person I should be able to be the most vulnerable with and like have the most sort of feeling. And it was actually a really, like, I think I've only, like, kind of realized sort of recently, like, what a damaging idea that is and how I've actually been trying to, like, it's one of many things I've been trying to, like, unlearn. And I think I would see very, you know, and then, like, also I'd see variations of it, like, in other places in my life, you know, where, like, if someone just saying, like, that's a really, like, intense thing to say, or that's, like, a very dramatic, and it's like, well, I don't know. It's an intense thing. I don't know. Like, how else do I respond to that? Like, I feel like this is a thing that I've been trying to, like, unlearn and trying to, like, figure out and articulate and also, like, honor in other people and, like, honor and, like, also in children. I mean, my partner works with kids and, like, it's really a gift to hear her get to talk about or to hear her talk about interacting with children and their feelings and, like, the way that you have to kind of, like, teach and guide and mentor, but also, like, honor, like, because you are getting this, like, really raw, unfiltered thing, and, like, by someone who's, like, still learning, who, like, hasn't been knocked around by the world enough to know that you have to, like, shove that stuff down, right? And so they're, like, having these, like, really authentic emotional experiences, and yeah, it's, like, weird how people just, like, really are just, like, yeah, you should just, like, tell a child that, like, they're having too many feelings and, like, tell them to be quiet. And it's, like, why? Why on earth would you do that? Like,
right.
It's funny,
as
like,
if it's
these,
possible, yeah.
Right, like,
yeah.
New parenting books. So, you know, I was parenting through the last decade or so and have been doing it for 13 years. And so the new book's coming out about how to approach, especially, like, tantrums and big upset feelings. It's the same technique that you use in a hostage situation,
which I thought was amazing.
Wait, like what? Like
you
honor?
Mirror you.
Oh, sure.
So my kid says, "I want that candy," and I say, "No, you really want that candy. I'm pissed. I know you're really upset about it, and that sucks. It does. It sucks not to get the candy."
Yeah.
And I was reading about how they had figured out that hostage situations is very similar to raising toddlers.
Yeah.
Because they are like little hostage takers. They're terrifying.
Right.
Wow.
They're smart.
Wow.
But just that idea of not shutting down a feeling but acknowledging it would take so much energy out of the interaction.
Yeah.
Well, I think too, like, I mean, I don't know if this comes into play, but I think a lot of young, creative, artistic people are always told they're too sensitive, they're too dramatic, you know, those two things in particular. Yeah. So I wonder if part of it is, I mean, obviously some is specific to you, but like, you know, a lot of kids who are, they have a lot of feelings or are told by people maybe who don't understand them that like, you're too sensitive, you're too dramatic,
yeah.
You know, get a hold of yourself, but that's who they are. They can't get it. That's sort of what makes them special,
yeah.
You know, is that they feel it.
And acknowledging it is just really going to help move things forward. Like, you know what I mean?
And I think also the thing is that if you deny that in somebody, they'll find an outlet for it. So
well,
like,
they will.
This is
yeah.
actually, so the thing about me and my religious period of my life was that it was entirely self-imposed. My parents, we went to like church, but like my parents were not religious people, like in that way. Well, they were like, but they were just, and I fell in with like a gang of evangelicals at my school, and I would like go to Bible study. It was like so intense, and like because I think I was just like, I want I have big feelings. Oh God, that's the container that I need to contain the feelings that I'm having about. I also think I just wanted to like have sex, but like didn't know. So I was just like, I'm feeling a lot of feelings, and I need to like put it somewhere, and like I literally need a deity sized bowl to put it in because everyone in my life is telling me like. Your feelings don't matter, you're too melodramatic, whatever. And they will find outlets for it, and some of them are better than others. Like, I could have been worse. Like, I mean, luckily it was a short-lived period, but it was very, like, important, you know, and very shaped me in a lot of ways. But also, like, you know, I think that people find, if someone's not validating their feelings or, like, saying, like, they'll find a place for it. And I think that's, like...
What is that John Donne poem, Batter My Heart, Three-Person God? Like, woo! Just the most dramatic. Okay, it's like an, basically an S&M poem for God.
Wait, here.
It's a John Donne Batter My Heart, Three-Person God. Very embodied and violent.
Oh, my God. Well, you've just, okay, well, I know what I'm doing after this, which is.
So it's interesting because, I mean, Donne's a great example, but, you know, Carmen, you're also talking about having all these feelings, and I know, Stephen, you're talking about artists being told they're too sensitive. At least for me, I went to the page in a notebook because it was the place that I could get those feelings out.
Yeah.
It was also back when I was growing up, because it wasn't through the internet and we didn't have as many of those outlets, it was a place where I could feel kind of safe, where I didn't have to share those feelings. Mm-hmm. So when I was writing, my goal, I mean, somewhere I'm sure I thought I want a book out there or something, but I also hadn't read any contemporary authors. I didn't grow up in a world full of academics or full of folks who were professionally creative in any way. I didn't know that was possible. So the thought of me reading something out loud or sharing it with others was really, it wasn't in my mind. When you were writing, do you remember at a certain point with any of these, or when you were at a point in your life where you felt that you were not only writing, but that you were writing for an audience? I mean, you mentioned the live journal.
It was live journal. I mean, literally, so, it was live journal.
But so, like, when you, with that poem, were you, all those big feelings or all of the attention, I just love the sound in that poem. Maybe there was a class, but was there ever, like, were you sharing them with other people? Were you going to open mics? Were you doing any of that stuff? Or was it really for you until live journal where the audience came in?
It was mostly for me until live journal. Like, in live journal, I started my live journal when I was 15. So, like, yeah, well, everyone was on, like, Zanga, and then I looked at Zanga, and I was like, I don't know. And then, I started my live journal and kept
I'm having, like, a visceral reaction to these words.
Zanga, Open Diary.
I mean, I remember them.
Yeah, I know, right?
In my cells.
So I think, I mean, it was private. I mean, there was also a part of my life where, like, I was writing poetry, and it was, like, performative for, like, my adults. Because my parents were, like, oh, look at her writing poems. Yeah. And so there was a time in my life when, like, every holiday, my dad would be like, write a poem for your mother. And he would just, like, it was like a machine. Like, he would just be like, if you can't get a present for that person, you should write him a poem. And so I feel like there were also a lot of, like, poems I was almost, like, written against, that I wrote against my will in that context.
Poems written against your will.
At some point, like, but then, yeah, like, I got my live journal, and I remember pretty quickly I started acquiring readers who were not people that I knew in real life, and people would comment and respond, and, like, it sounds weird, but it was so valid. Like, I was like, oh my God, like, people care what I think.
That's awesome.
Like, people want to know, and they want me to write more, and, like, they have thoughts, and, like, about, like, what I'm saying and how I'm saying it, and, you know, and I was just, like, learning, and I don't know if I put my poetry. I probably did put some poems in there, but it was kind of like almost like essay. Like, it was like, because it was just me, and I occasionally write, like, a little piece of fiction or something, but, like, mostly it was like just like me writing about things that were happening, but almost like learning how to compose them and, like, figure out where they fit on the page and, like, how to, like, move through them. And yeah, but I think that was the moment where I was like, oh, people actually care what I think. I actually also have this, like, very clear memory. Oh, my God, this is so embarrassing. I was on also a bunch of, like, forums and, like, email. What are they called when
listservs.
Yes. I shouldn't know the word listserv.
Way back.
But I was on, like, a bunch of listservs. And one listserv I was on was about this Canadian actor that I really loved named Sean Ashmore. So he played Jake in the short-lived Animorphs show. And I was very into him. And he's since been in, like, he was in, like, X-Men. He still actually is, like, occasionally acts, and I've always noticed him because I'm like,
there he is.
He also has a twin brother named Aaron, but I can tell them apart because that's how.
You have a poster of him on your
I do have a poster, but, like, they're identical, but, like, slightly different.
Well, and,
like, I literally have, like, watched something and been like, that's Aaron Ashmore, that's Sean Ashmore's twin brother, but I can tell the difference. Anyway. But yeah, so I was really into him. And I was on a listserv, like a Sean Ashmore fan listserv. And I remember there was he was in a made-for-TV movie that I can't remember the title of, but the premise of a movie was that about a girl who is a freak at a circus. She's like a wolf woman. Like, she's got, like, hair everywhere. And then she, like, I remember she, like, takes something, or she's, like, a spell, something happens, and she begins to lose all the fur, but as she becomes more animalistic, so it's, like, it's, like, an inversion of, so it's, like, by the end, she's, like, biting people and, like, becoming this kind of animal, but she looks like a
visually,
normal woman.
She's,
exactly, and he plays, like, the love interest, and that's, like, basically what I remember with the movie, but I remember, I think he's very handsome. I'm not even, like, really into guys anymore, but I'm
showing,
like,
a picture. I'll put the picture up on the website.
I think he's dreamy, and he honestly was like, I thought he was very charming. Anyway, but he's in this movie, and this is like I'm sure this movie does not exist anywhere. Like, it was like a made for TV film, and I remember writing an impassioned little essay on the listserv about this, and I was like, don't you see, like, as she becomes more, like, looks more like a human being, she's more like an animal, and I was, like, so obsessed with this movie, and I remember then people responding and being like, that's such an insightful thing to say, right. Like, and I remember bringing my father in and making him read people's responses to my essay. And, like, the sad thing, and I'm not to be, like, this person, but it's, like, my whole life I've been trying to get my father to, like, see me. And this is an ongoing theme in my life that exists to this day. And it's very strange and sad. But even then, I was like, look, like, do you see, like, I wrote something.
There's value.
And there's value in what I wrote. And, like, people respond. And then people, I remember also people being like, how old are you? People were like, oh, my God, that's so. And my dad was just kind of like, I think he was like, who are these people? And, like, what is happening?
What are you doing on the internet?
Yeah, literally, like, what is that? Like, I think he was more confused about, like, what the medium by which I was getting this validation, which is, like, what is actually happening here. But I remember just having that thought, being like, oh, look, like, I'm having a thought, and the thought is valuable. And the insight that I'm having is something that other people are, like, responding to. That was probably, like, around the same. I probably was about 15. So I feel like it was, like, in that same kind of moment. So, yeah, so I feel like that. I think it's just, like, yeah, like, the technology, like, offered me that space. And I'm sure if I was, like, a teenager now, I'd probably be on TikTok or whatever. You know, I'd be trying to do the same thing. So thank God. Like, I'm just so grateful. Like, every day I'm, like, thank Christ that I am not... Like, that I am not, that a lot of this juvenilia is only on paper in a box in my house. Right. Yep. It's not published anywhere. It's not like, it's just, because I feel like I would have been, like, all over TikTok and probably, like, very messy if I had done that, so.
Can you,
would you post writing on TikTok? How do they, I don't even know how they do it.
There are, like, TikTok poets. I don't fully understand it. I mean, okay. I wouldn't be posting writing. I guess I'd be, like... People have, like, people, like, speak, like, yeah. It's almost, like, okay. like a verbal essay. Like, they're, like, giving it, it's, like, almost like a little essay or, like, a think, but they're, like,
got it.
Speaking it into the camera.
There is a strange form of fanfic on TikTok where,
oh, sure, yeah.
where you take, I know this because I spy on my 13-year-old, but not too much for when he hears this. And it's where you're taking a character and you're shipping him, you know, sure, you're creating different relationships with them, and so... He's doing it with, like, drawing and then writing a little narrative and then performing, like, a little piece of, like, where he has, like, his drawing of the character from Call of Duty that he's in love with, like, and then the conversation that they have, you know, or whatever. And it's just, it's a very short little pieces. And, yeah, I just would be hard to look back at. I hope. Maybe there'll be a different generation, Will, that where they won't feel that.
I think that also, like, there's something about, like, fantasy and, like, I don't know. Like, another thing that I did, I almost brought it in, I did not, but, like, another thing that happened recently and I was that in 2000, my aunt gave me a time capsule. Like, it was like a millennium time capsule that you could, like, put, like, write stuff and, like, put stuff in it and then open it. And I've carried it through, like, so many moves. Multiple states. I've had it for so long, and I finally opened it last fall. After I was supposed to actually open it in 2020, and then COVID happened, and I totally, obviously, other things were going on, and I, like, forgot. And in it, there's an audio cassette that I recorded, and I had recorded. So it's me. It's me, and I played it. I had not heard it. I know it was going to be. I played it for my girlfriend, who lost her mind. She, like, could not physically stand about listening to this. And it's me being like, hi, Carmen. It's me. I mean me. And it's like me,
whoa,
like, play where I'm like, where it's like me from the past. And it's literally me. And then I'm like, and then what did I say? I'm like, did you marry the man of your dreams? Are you a doctor? Like, it's like me asking
whoa.
All those questions. So the answer is none of the things that I'm saying are true. And I'm literally like, I probably was 13 when I made this. So, like, I'm so young, but, like, and it's crazy because it's my voice, but it's like this tiny little soft. Like, it's like the same voice and also just so alien and so beautiful. Lauren lost her mind. She, like, was crying. She was, like, having so many feelings about it. And then I proceeded to, like, play a bunch of, I just record a bunch of radio. So I'm just like, now I'm going to play the radio. And I just, like,
so
it's
cool.
Like commercials from 1999 and, like,
wow.
songs and things. But anyway, but it was just so funny because it's, like, literally me speaking. It was, like, me being, like, I'm speaking to my future self. And saying it was, like, banana shit. And then also I read news stories. So I'm, like... I think I talk about, like, a school shooting that happened.
Whoa.
And I talk about, like, I'm just like, these things happen. But I'm also performing it. So I'm like, recently there was this thing happened. And I'm just, like, putting on a little play, but, like, for my future self.
Wow.
Like, I have no way of knowing, like, the version of me that's going to be hearing it in, like, you know, 20 years or whatever, 23 years.
Would she be proud of you?
I think she would be proud. I think she'd be completely baffled by, like, a lot of things. But I think, yeah, I think if I was, like, you're a professional writer and, like, turns out you're gay. You don't really know what gay is yet. Well, maybe you kind of do, but not really. But you're happy. Like, you're happy. You figured a lot of things out. You found a place for that horniness. You found a place for that feeling. You don't believe in God anymore, but don't worry about it. It's fine. And, like, you know, like, I feel like, yeah, I think she would be. And I'd be like, you have books. Like, you published books. Like, wow. You did the thing. Like, you did the thing that you honestly, like, you know, when I was a kid, I had so much. In school, I remember learning how to write a letter. Do you remember, like, the class where they taught you how to write a letter? Mm-hmm. I don't even know. I guess they probably don't teach this anymore.
No.
But like, for obvious reasons. But, like, and I remember being like, if you have an address, you can send a letter to literally anybody. And I would mail letters to, like, authors. And I would take care of their publishers because I found the address in, like, the front of the book. And I would email companies because I found out you can get samples of things. I would write to, like...
That's what I remember, too.
Yeah, and everyone, like, they were like, yeah, if you write to, like, Tide and you're... But, like, why was I getting, like, samples of detergent when I was a child? Like, who knows?
You're parentified.
You got to write a letter.
That's right, yeah. A letter. And my godmother gave me stationery. It was jungle-themed stationery that had my name. It was, like, customized. And I would also, like... write stories and send them to publishers. And I remember one time sending a letter to a publisher that my ex-wife, who worked in publishing for years, told me that she was like, I'm sure some intern received this letter and, like, loved it and, like, hung it up somewhere. But it basically writing them being like, here's a chapter of my novel. If you want the rest of the novel, please write back. Also, I want the illustrator of the cover to be the illustrator who does the Babysitter's Club books. And I had, like, that name I found, like, in one of the books. So I feel like I remember just feeling so much power and being able to be like, I get to, like, assert myself in the world and, like, write to people and connect with people and things. And, you know, publishing a book, the idea of, like, because books were so important to me. And I think if I said to her, like, you are going to have books.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have books and people are going to read them. And there's going to be, like, a little page that says, like, also by Carmen Ray Machado. You know, it's going to, like, be, like, I think she would just be amazed. And I think she would be, like, so pleased. And I'm glad. I'm glad that I... could, like, do right by her.
Oh, yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
That makes me happy. Inside.
What are you working on now? Can you talk about it?
Sure.
Aside from writing what I'm going to assume are amazing poems.
Well, I did have one published last year, so that's exciting.
Yeah,
this year. Yeah, so that's exciting. I'm still working on the poems. I mean, that's actually, like, actually the big thing now is I'm working on, like, an erasure poem.
Ooh, I love erasure.
Which I have is a form that I've always really, really loved. Yeah. I really love Chase Bergen's Red, and I really love, like, I'm really, really into, so I've been using a text exchange with somebody that I kept for, like, a really long time and then put it all into, like, a format where I could try and, so I'm working on that. So we'll see, but I'm like, you know, I think the thing I love about poetry is I get to experiment with, like, form in this way that's, like, very satisfying to me, but then their experiments are very tiny and contained. Mm-hmm. This one is bigger because it's, like, the document I have that's the texts are, like, 100 pages long, so I have to, like, figure out how to, like, anyway, but yeah, so working on poetry. I'm trying to finish a book, a fiction book that I sold before COVID that's been, like, kind of a struggle, but I'm close. Like, it's weird. I just need to, like, really just buckle down and finish it, but it's been, I think at this point it's, like, a mental, it's, like, a block.
Yeah.
And I'm working on some TV shows that I can't talk about a ton, but it's very exciting. And yeah, I'm just, like, I don't know. I'm keeping busy. I'm, like, working on a lot of stuff, trying to, like, I think, you know, COVID was, like, really hard for me, and I'm still kind of trying to, like, reset my brain and my body a little bit from that time. Like, a lot changed about, like, even just, like, my sleeping, like, my habits and I feel like I'm still kind of a little bit off kilter, and I'm trying desperately to, like, get it back. But yeah, keeping busy and, like, definitely trying new things, and also currently playing tons of Baldur's Gate 3.
Oh, I've heard about that.
So that is taking up a weird amount of my time, which more than I care to admit, but it's fun. So, and actually, I keep thinking about, but it's fun because I keep playing it and thinking the writing is really good, and I keep being like, I really want to write for a video game. I should really I should really
like Last of Us. Did you?
Oh yeah, I love the Last. I mean, yeah, and Last of Us is such a good game. Both those games are really good, and I find video game writing and the form of the video game, like, really fascinating. And I'm like, I would absolutely love to write for a video game. And I have no idea how one does that. So if you're listening to this, you know, let me know. But I really want to because I, like, love video games. I'm really obsessed with them as a form. And I'm like, I would totally love to do that.
Well, Carmen Maria Machado, thank you so much for joining us on Sad Me of the Past.
Yeah.
It's just been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Iowa, the Magid Center for Writing, the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, and the Graduate College. We'd like to thank the Center for Language and Culture Learning for use of their podcast studio. Sad Me of the Past is part of the Writing University Podcast Network at the University of Iowa. This network includes podcasts from creative writing programs and departments all across our campus. Visit writinguniversity.org/podcasts to see our full list of offerings, including Writing Matters, The 11th Hour, Origins, The Short Coat, and more.